Hello and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon, recording from Nicosia in Cyprus. And with me, from Myanmar, I have Noor Angelina. Welcome, Noor.
Hi, Sinan. Welcome. Thank you for inviting me for this talk.
Well, Angelina, you know me. Noor is a fellow WASL member. And a big conversation we've been having amongst the women peace builders and women mediators is that a lot of conflicts don't get the coverage they should, and they become invisible. And Myanmar is one of them. Noor is from, just to give her a general picture, she is from Myanmar. She's a woman human rights defender. She's an educator. And she is currently serving as the chair of the Alliance for Gender Inclusion in the Peace Process, AGIP. But she will fill us more in. But she's very involved in the peace process and women mediators. And she's very interested in putting women forward, ensuring that women's rights are followed. Noor, the floor is yours. Tell me a little bit more about you.
My name is Noor Angelina, and from Myanmar. Currently, I'm staying in the border of Myanmar, where Myanmar is now in a very active conflict. So a lot of us, we are those working for civil society. We have to be in a safe place to work for our fellow population of Myanmar, even a human rights defender and the civilian. So I have been working for women's rights for a decade, and before that I'm more in the educators, and also I teach and more on the human resource development and organizational development background. But it's my passion to work for women, especially for women empowerment and those women participation in the peace process. Yeah, that's short about me. Thank you.
Tell me, Noor, some of us have a little bit of an idea of what is actually happening in Myanmar now, because I think the thing that's happening now is the result of a coup takeover in 2021 by the military, which has destabilized the whole country. But give us a little bit more detail, and please come closer to the microphone.
Can you hear me now? Okay.
Yes.
So, I'm going to talk a little bit about Myanmar. Normally, Myanmar is not being well known in the whole globe. Like, those people are not hearing about Myanmar. Myanmar is next to Thailand and China, Laos and India. So, normally when we talk about Myanmar, they don't know much. But when we talk about Thailand, they know it's just next to Thailand. We are existing between the two giant, India and China too. So talk about Myanmar. Myanmar obtained independence in 1948 after British colonial. In the era of 1948 to 1960, when Myanmar was the best country in Southeast Asia, you will be surprised, because Rangoon University was the best university that the Asian potential leaders wanted to attend. So, and after the independence, there was some unresolved issue, and there were tension among ethnics and groups and military. So then along that, the military coup attempt was happening in 1962. That was about the leaders that time were taking over the country for their own interest and power. So at that time, General Nguyen was on their rules, and on their team is on power. And after that, we had 1988 protest, which is uprising nationwide protest called 4/8 Revolution. So at that time, many students died from military crackdown for the protest, and the protesters were killed, jailed, and becoming political prisoner just for being a democracy activist. And along the students of 1988, they are becoming the combatant and going into the border area or studying about how to fight against the military. So that was the first time like the ABSDF, those forces are coming out. And along that, the country was still unstable and struggling. The civilians are suffering, and the country still keep on like up and down. And 2007, we have another Saffron Revolution, which is led by a Buddhist monk. That time was due to the petrol prices are increasing, the commodity prices are increasing, because the government, the military government, because of their interest, I think they were not interested to the civilians about the country economics and GDP rather than their own interests, So that was happened, and even the monk were being cracked down, killed, and jailed. So that was also happened, and but it was not very long. Along that political crisis, there was some so-called like democracy leaders, like leaders like Aung San Suu Kyi. They were fighting for democracy, and there was about 2012 peace initiative were happening. So it was nationwide ceasefire agreement was signed in 2015, and it
Can I
was
ask you something? In all of
yeah.
these crises and changes, how strong was civil society and how strong were how active were the students?
Oh, the students, since 1988, the students were very strong, and they were having like the student union, and they after that they are being cracked down and killed and jailed. Some are still inactive. They are in working as low profile, and along that the country have in transitional, like they want to be a democracy country, so there was like a more stronger on the union type of student union, workers unions are
Okay.
emerging. So it's happening again. That is why I will be continue talking about this 2021 revolution is led by the students and the Generation Z.
Exactly, because we know in a lot of countries that's the generation that makes the change. The students are usually very instrumental in major changes in repressed communities or communities where there's instability. The students usually come and make the difference. So thank God for the educational institutions in the world because they give a space for the like-minded Generation Zs of every generation to come together and actually try and put into effect change they would like to see.
Education is the best weapon for every changes, and that is why I'm so into the education sector, and I'm as an educator.
So, are you a teacher? Are you a teacher, or do you work for you work for an NGO? You head an NGO, but is the job that pays your salary, your rent, which I often like to categorize it, are you a teacher by do you teach?
Yes, I teach. Actually, my teaching is more on like the vocational and the work related, like human resource, office management, and like those job readiness skills for the youth, and like the skills like our office, how to manage the office skill. That is my since I was 22, I was having in the office field and working for and voluntarily teaching all the time. But in the
Well,
other
that's
hand,
a
I'm yeah.
carry on.
In the other hand, I'm also in the civil society organization, because I like working for the people, the civilians, and my own people, the current people. And I'm strongly believe that I will be contribute more when I work in the civil society organization and working in a wider range, that what I learned will be contribute more in the system and advocacy and all these kind of things. It's like integrated approach for me.
Oh, I totally agree with you because it's exactly the same with me because I spent my life doing administration because I'm a single parent and I needed to put a roof over the heads of my family. But the work I do on the side, and which gives me less financial benefit but more, but feeds my soul, is the work that I feel I learn more. I feel better about myself because I'm doing something for the community. I get so excited when I see, and you know this from the younger generation, I get so excited when I see them actually putting themselves forward and having voices and asking for a voice at the table. So I agree with you. What I do on the side is a lot more important than what I do to put food on the table. But the food on the table needs to be there. And
Yeah,
I,
of course.
the other reason you need the food on the table job is because it puts a structure in your life. That's what I realized. There's a certain routine, and it's easier to work around it because I've just come out on pension. And suddenly I don't have a structure in my life, and I'm battling without that, to know that the 3 or 4 hours a day are blocked out and I work beyond. So anyway, so tell me a little bit more because I know the situation in Myanmar, it's been going on for 4 years. The tent situation has been going on for 4 years, and the problems within the society are quite big for everyone. It's not just the woman, but security, displacement, food on the table. So you tell me more about what you see around you. And what you hear around you.
I'll be talking a little bit about how the peace process was started in 2015.
Okay.
And in around that, there was so-called democracy was started in Myanmar, and people were very moved by the terms of democracy. And we have elected national leader of democracy. And that when they are ruling the times, the country were we were able to shake them to go forward about the changes. So we see how the democratic countries are having progressing. So we were elected again about to be a more multi or parties democracy system in 2020, but in favor 2021, first favor 2021, the coup was happening again, and that was the darkest time in Myanmar civilian, because it was so it was the bad, very bad experience for us. And people started to have a movement, the revolutions, and as I said, it was this time was also led by Gen Z, and not even Gen Z, the civil servants, they are conducting civil disobedience movement. You can Google it. CDM of Myanmar was very a big population of the civil servants are joining a democracy movement. And some of the youth, they become people defense forces. That wasn't mean to be violent, but to protect themselves, to protect the civilian, and also the coming to coordinate with ethnic resistance groups.
Can
So,
I ask you, in the days before the coup, was there any signs that perhaps there was unrest within the community? Was the coup unexpected totally? Or was there, because often before a coup or an uprising, there is a, you could hear a hum, like of music or the bees in the, there's like a hum within the community. Was this something that was happening in Myanmar, or was it totally out of the blue?
Actually, I think it wasn't totally out of the blue. There was an alarm, but I think our leaders doesn't have enough, early warning system, or maybe we can't do anything because of the military have weapons and power. They can't do anything by themselves. So, as a civilian, as a layman, I believe that there must be an early warning, but it was too late to know. Maybe that was happening, and a lot of parliamentarians are being arrested, and Aung San Suu Kyi and the president, they are being arrested. And, a lot of people who involved in their NLDs and all the democracy leaders, they are being arrested in the jail. Some already released, a few of them already released, but those are leaders like presidents and Aung San Suu Kyi are still inside the jail now.
But yeah. I agree with you. To go back to your remark about early warning, I think one of the strongest conversations that has come out of after Security Resolution 1325 is not stopping the war. It's listening to prevent the war, at least listening before to maybe ensure that the war, the conflict doesn't get out of control. And whenever we are asked questions about, tell us what the woman can do, and that's one of the things that the woman can do, because a lot of the time women are a little bit more tuned into what's happening around them. They see a difference in the way children, the youth is operating or talking, or routines have changed. And we keep on saying early warning mechanisms, early warning mechanisms.
In this, along the this crisis, women are suffering. Everywhere women or children are becoming victims of the war and the conflict. So, but those women who are strong and work for the community, they're still working in forefront and providing humanitarian assistance, providing the healthcare for women. And despite the struggle of themselves, ourselves, we have to build our resistance to still help the community. And because we are not part of the we are not starting the conflict. We are not as we are not like a part of the conflict, but we are becoming the victims of the conflict. So but we want to be a peace builder. We want to be a mediator. We want to end the war. How we can end the war is the thing we are very looking forward. But in this Myanmar context, it's very special because the active conflict involving a lot of violence, especially conflict-related sexual violence. So women are suffering, even some... We have very brave women becoming combatant, women, even the girls, those they wanted to be part of contribution, what they can do.
So you're saying the sexual related violence is very high during this 4-year period?
Conflict related sexual violence is one of the things happening, I think, everywhere in the civil war, but also in our context,
Because as far as I know, one of the problems within the Myanmar conflict now is also the displaced Rohingyas. Within their context of that community, conflict-related sexual violence is horrendously high.
Yeah. Because when we talk about women like marginalized and vulnerability, ethnic women, Rohingya women, and those are they are like minority within minorities, they are very vulnerable. So even in the normal circumstances, they are lack of protection. So you can imagine in the conflict context, no one can protect each other, and there is no rules of law, so that is very challenging. You can imagine that how challenging.
Tell me, what about displacement? Is displacement really rampant now in the last 4 years? Are people, because of security, because of fleeing conflict, because of the high rate of intensity of conflict, is displacement out of control?
Surely the displacement is out of control. Especially in February, there was a new law coming out, the conscription bill. Actually, every country has a conscription bill, but in this Myanmar context, if the youth were to suffer the military, they know that they will suffer more. So a lot of youth, they also flee to the safe place. And before the conscription bill, since 2021, a lot of people have to flee to the safe place. Like there were IDPs, refugees, and some people they have to find a safe place at that country. So it's uncontrollable. And those people left behind in their native town or inside the country, they are suffering like a very high price of commodity prices, like 4 or 5 times than the previous before coup. Yeah, it was a long, the suffering was terrible. And yeah, the displacement, I hope people don't experience like our human trafficking and being exploited from that displacement. We had a lot of the stories about human trafficking. It's uncontrollable because our people, we don't have, some people they don't have legal document. It's so very likely to be trafficked, yeah, when they cross the border.
But I think that one of the thing, the biggest, I don't know what to call it, but when you have displacement, it's not just this displacement. People forget, or the general impression that it's just displacing. It's not just displacing. It's actually putting people in danger of being targets of traffickers. And it's traffickers, it's sexual. For the woman, it's a little bit harsher, because in most cases it's sexual trafficking. But it's not just sexual trafficking, it's labor trafficking, it's young kids, it's organs. So I think we don't talk enough about this fact that displacement is not, and I'm saying not just putting people, moving them from where they are safe, it's also putting them right in the jaws of the lion, because they are open to trafficking. They might have documents, but they might not have them with them. They might be undocumented. They might be traveling and they've lost. So to me, this issue of displacement is a horrible thing, because we don't understand at what levels, at how many levels it puts people in danger. And usually the biggest victims are the women.
Yes, definitely.
Because
When you
from
are
what I see, the figures for displacement in Myanmar is close to 2.6 million. That I found it in an article, I might be wrong, but they're talking about. Carry on.
It's about 2, 3 millions, around 3 millions already. So yeah, you can
And tell me, what
imagine.
about aid? Technically, because you're not technically, you there's displacement, there's a conflict. Humanitarian aid, is there a problem with humanitarian aid? Is there enough humanitarian aid?
The humanitarian aid is another crisis. Because people lost their jobs, and multinational companies are leaving the countries, and those youth inside the country, they lost, and those youth, they flee from the law, the conscription law, the company, they lose their human resource, and those in the town. But when we talk about the rural area, humanitarian assistance are not able to do effectively because of one reason is the banking crisis also in happening in Myanmar. The banking have many restrictions to receive funding, and also cross-border humanitarian aids are not, they are doing, but not able to do very well yet. So it's difficult that people will be able to get access to the assistance, like from even from Rakhine and other remote area. They are having very difficult situation, especially for livelihood.
And to add that problem of the limited humanitarian aid reaching the rural areas, you're also having a tax on relief workers. But I think the other issue that sometimes we don't talk about is that when you have displacement and communities that are displaced, in addition to the trafficking, the other piece of trafficking is that the young men are also targets for the militia, to join the militia. Is that the case in Myanmar?
It is very likely, but like very experienced ethnic resistant groups, they are follow United Nations rules, so they won't recruit even the youth they want to join. They won't recruit under 18 youths to join them. Those, very small group and very unorganized, or how to say, they can doing it by themselves. So it very
Okay.
dangerous for the youth.
It is very dangerous for the youth because they don't have roots like you and I have, or they're just open for anything. And if something, I think it's one of the reasons why we're seeing a lot of the youth joining the far right, because they come out into a system that's not working, and the far right appears to give some kind of structure and security. And there you go.
But
Tell
if
me,
they
is
were
the
joining, but if they were joining ethnic resistant groups, they are, they will be given well informed about how they have to be in their system and how to do their how to participate their revolutionary spirits very in the sense of to be a formalized and in the education also they will get.
So you're saying that in the resistance movements, they actually bring them in but educate them.
Also they will provide education from them.
And is their child, are they, do they bring in young boys? 15-year-olds, 14-year-olds?
It was clearly stated in the ethnic resistance groups that they won't as recruit under 18. Those fully become 18 years old only they will recruit, but those are under 18 they will sent to school, so they will be learning, having their education, even online or in person. There is a school in their ethnic area, so we will have like a federal school, and they are setting up for the youth education system, because that is one of the sector we can let the youths not learning during the crisis. They also must learn. So that is the thing we are working for it also.
I think that's so important because a lot of the time when there's a crisis, the youth get lost. I'm South African born, and I'm also old, which means I lived through the apartheid years, and I lived through the Soweto riots of 76, where the apartheid government changed the law for the education, and the black community revolted. And the message, and for which he was strongly condemned of Winnie Mandela, was revolution before education. And the result of that was that my generation, because I just come out of, I was just going into university, the result of that is that a lot of the Africans of my generation don't have a formal education, because the revolutionaries had told them to burn down the system and then they will get educated. And life doesn't work like that. You don't need to get a university education, but you do need a basic education of reading, writing, mathematics, computer skills, language skills, business management, which is a way of managing your life. So I think that's the right way to lead a revolution, by ensuring that the kids don't just come along in this big wave of passion, but actually get some roots. Tell me, in terms of gender rights, how are the women in Myanmar? Is there gender equality? Is it possible to check it because of the conflict?
Not even before conflict or since I were knowing about Myanmar. Myanmar has been like a patriarchal system in the gender issue. A lot of male dominant in their leadership role. So it is a fight for the women to be in the leadership role and the decision makers. And it was still happening until now, even in the among the revolutionary system. It is a fight that women to get a seat and to get a place for decision making. And we even this time we still provide women empowerment program and leadership program and educations, giving a lot of awareness program. This still ongoing because we can stop this program if we were wanted to women to be in the place of our leadership role.
So tell me, women do have access, though, to education.
Access to education currently inside the country, a lot of the educators, university and schools are professors, they are conducting civil disobedience movement. So the some of them they fled into the border area and they joined the ethnic education system. So those can access to education at the border area, they can join. And some of them they are studying in other country like Thailand, Cambodia or other like third countries. They are trying their best to access to education to keep on going about their progressing on their leadership's role.
Okay, and Myanmar is predominantly a Buddhist community.
Yes,
Okay.
it is named as a Buddhism country.
Okay, so you're saying that women do have access, but patriarchy still presides.
I mean, woman has access mean not a given condition. It is like we have to strive, we have to fight for it, and the system it sets have our more space for men and boys, even our education sector. The girls have to be higher marks to become a doctors, or the girls have to be higher marks to become an engineer. So girls, women and girls, they have to find a harder way and fighting to get the place they wanted to be.
Okay, well, I mean, that's gender inequality, and it's opposite gender of it's gender inequality opposite, because women have to get higher marks to get the same as men, not even the same
Definitely,
marks.
definitely there is no gender equality.
If you could give out one message to the international community, I'd ask you to give one message to the international community and one message to the militia, the military leading Myanmar at the moment. What is the message you would give each of them?
Actually, to the international community, we have been getting support for their some financially, some like morally, their support for being supporting us in the democracy movement that I really appreciate. But sometimes I think that they need to work more for us, because when they see unfairness, like they see people dying and the civilian are suffering, they should do something that really make into the changes and into the action. So please look into the Myanmar crisis. And it's not like Myanmar crisis is getting like Cold War, and nobody's getting concerned about, oh, what is happening in Myanmar? We should look what we should do for them. People get lesser interest, and because it was not in the media anymore. So don't just listen to the media. Just also talk to your friends who work inside Myanmar or outside Myanmar, who work closely for the movement, and you have to listen so that you will understand more. And yeah, it's sometimes media also can be mistaken, revealed on you. So what is happening in Myanmar? Talk to the people inside Myanmar, outside Myanmar, who work for the movement, so that you will understand more and will be able to help more. And also,
Sorry, before you carry on, one of your biggest supporters internationally is Japan.
yeah, Japan, America, and also like Europe, yeah, they are
The
quite
big supporters.
interesting. Yeah. EU are also helping us, yeah.
Okay.
And
And your
Korea,
message
yeah,
to
you
them.
were surprised. Korea, South Korea is supporting, and you know, you will be surprised they are get involving in a lot of movement, yeah.
Oh, that, but that's good because areas like Japan and Korea are more relevant in the sense that they're close to you, they're neighbors, so they need to find a way of keeping the balances within a Myanmar or their other neighbors. And your message to the militia, the military junta, except for get
Actually,
down and have elections.
yeah,
I said it.
yeah, because there is something happening for a reason that they should know what is the reason behind. And inside Myanmar, they have to look how people are suffering. And I think even I talk to them this way, my voice will not be heard. And even we talk a lot, if they were having their heart and they were having enough humanity, they will be looking for the civilian, and they will find solution what will be what they should do for Myanmar people. But until now, it seems that they were not doing enough action, and they don't, they won't give up something like this. So actually, to be frank, I have no message, no convincing message for them. Sorry for that, because
I think the reason you don't have a
yeah.
convincing message is because the way the military junta works is to make people scared. They don't want people
Yeah.
to be happy or content. They want people to live in fear so that they can
Yeah.
control them.
Yes. That is their mission, yeah. What they wanted to do is ruling with their power and making the country under their control, yes.
Okay, before we close this interview, this conversation that I'm finding very enlightening, is there anything you would like to say?
Yeah, thank you very much for this interview, and I hope I can bring some message to those who listen this podcast. And we really want the genuine peace, and we really want our people to be having a good life rather than running here and there, have suffering along with the pandemic and the water, backwater situation. Oh, you know, by the way, inside Myanmar now is a lot of flood happening because of heavy rain. So people don't have legal protection, physical protection, and everything is, you know, missing out. So We want the genuine peace, and we are looking for the way that the genuine peace is happening in the future. I don't know. My voice
No,
alone
because
is
I think
not supporting.
the one thing we
Yeah,
haven't
but
discussed, and is a whole big chapter and affects all of us, is how climate change is also adding to the crises we're having. The
yes,
flooding,
landslide,
the
landslide,
yeah,
flooding. Yeah.
fires, drought.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So,
Yep.
and everyone's considering it a separate issue, and they're
Yes.
not considering that peace is so multidimensional, and the climate change is a
Yes.
very important part of peace building, because if we don't have a planet to live in,
Yeah. Yes.
why do we need peace? We won't be around. It comes
Yeah.
together.
Although we are very, I personally believe in nonviolence, but I don't know. Just raising our voice and walking like this is not, if not bringing any changes. What should we do? And we are looking for some other better way how we can build our genuine peace. And we want to live together peacefully. We don't want enemies. We don't want, this kind of people are killing us. We will kill them back. No, we don't want this kind of thing. We want genuine peace. Yeah.
We want dignity. We want to be able to live a life with dignity, which means
Yeah.
respecting ourselves and
Yeah.
respecting the people around us. Okay, I agree
Yeah.
with you. We just need to find a way to push our voices more, because this patriarchal toxic voice around us is very overwhelming. So
Yeah.
I'm with you, Noor. Genuine peace, dignity for all of us. Look at peace
Yeah.
at every level, not just at the level of the negotiations, but
Surely.
education, like you're talking about,
Yeah.
or humanitarian aid. And let's see if we can get someone else to also speak from Myanmar. Because the more people that speak about these invisible conflicts, maybe the more help will come, or maybe there will be more pressure on the military junta.
Yeah. I can introduce some more other women leaders that can talk to you.
Okay, after the show, you will send me some names, but I'm really glad we spoke, and really thank you for being available, and thank you for bringing light to the conflict in Myanmar. And have a
Thank you
lovely
so
rest of
much,
the
Janine.
day.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for your
Thank you, and
consent
to
and your help, yeah, on this. Bye.
the listeners, stay safe, and remember, if my neighbor is not well, I'm also not well. So we have to be collaborative. We have to be
Yeah.
community-based.
Yeah, for the
Thank
listening, I wish you all the best and yeah, still listen to us and help us even just morally also work, make us motivated. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
you. Bye. Bye.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.